What's up, yo, y'alls? How are you doing? Welcome to This Week.
Wiggity, 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 whack.
I'm feeling fly, man. Here on This Week in Mormons, I'm feeling fly because I just got back from seeing Fast Five. So I feel like I am in touch with my reckless urban side.
Wait, did you really?
I did, and it was freaking awesome, dude.
On Rotten Tomatoes, it got like a 79%.
Yeah, it's 79%. All of the other Fast and the Furious movies are somewhere around 30 or something. And
13 to 30.
Yes. Jennifer Garner is their rating. Anyway, it's pretty funny that the fifth one out, all of a sudden, they've just hit everything perfectly. It's brilliant.
Well, you know what they say. Sometimes it takes five.
It does. And I thought it was great. It was just awesome and loud and gritty in a way. And it was like a heist movie. They changed the formula, I felt, this time around.
I heard there was not enough racing.
There was less racing. It was more of a heist movie than actual racing.
So they went the route of the Italian
job. It kind of was the Italian job, yes. It was the Italian job, but decidedly more violent. And I love that I'm sitting there with four of us roommates all went. And afterwards, two of us were kind of joking about the death toll in the movie. And then my roommate's like, what are you talking about? Nobody died. And we're, seriously, at least 40 people die in this movie. So.
Wait, but your roommate thought that none of them died?
Yeah, I say, some people have a hard time fully understanding what death is, I suppose.
What was misconveyed in the
movie? I don't know what movie he was watching, but I saw the one where people were gunned down relentlessly. So,
Jeff, that is how it is on the Miami streets of Costa Rica.
This movie takes place in Rio. You are confusing them because Too Fast,
Listen.
Too Furious does take place in Miami. I admit I had never seen any of the films, and I watched the first and second one in the same day last week. It was a very slow week. I watched a lot of terrible movies last week.
Jeff, this saddens me. No one should ever have to watch these movies.
No, it was great. I mean, I had that. I had Titanic 2, like we talked about before. It's good times.
Well, I'm excited to go see it. I will see it next week. It'll be tremendous.
Yeah.
So, I always go and see these with my brother. My brother-in-law loves the action flicks, and so we save them for each other. I made the mistake. I suggested we would go and see The Conspirator. That's the Abraham Lincoln
one.
Oh,
yes.
So we went and saw that like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe. And I was really like, it was definitely not an action flick. I was expecting a chase Jesse James through the woods type of movie, right? Because they have this great like 11-day, he escapes from DC and he's running and
yes.
He hides up in a barn and they track him, blah, blah, blah. Like there's a lot you could do with that.
Well, yeah.
That's all done and taken care of in the first 10 minutes of the movie. If that, 5 minutes.
Well, that's no fun.
Like, the assassination happens, they chase him down, catch him, bring him back, and I'm like, well, that was everything I was excited to see.
And if you remember when you and I went to Ford's Theater? So you were really revved up for this, I'm sure.
Dude, I was totally pumped for this, because I was like, we went there, we see this place, and like, we had the secret guide from the tour guide that was like, all right, listen, boys, let me tell you a little bit about this. Which was awesome, and we're like, man, somebody should make a movie about this. The next week, we see the trailer about The Conspirator. I'm pumped. I was like, finally, somebody saw the vision I saw, and then nothing.
Oh, so to put it in comparison, you don't want to know what happens in the first 5 to 10 minutes of Fast Five. See, while you were disappointed that all the good stuff happened, in ours, they bust Vin Diesel out of, like, you know, a sheriff's inmate van, which they flip by making the van drive over their car, which would probably kill everyone because it rolls about 20 times. And then they go into Rio and they start jacking cars and they drive cars off of cliffs into a gorge. All of that happens
for what?
Within like 10 minutes. It's awesome.
Why do they drive the cars off of
Not really by choice.
Gorges.
I don't want to spoil anything because it's very fresh in the theaters. But anyways, I had a grand old time. We tried to go see it on Friday, but it was sold out. Sad world.
Wow.
I'm excited. The summer movie season is upon us. It's a terrific time of year.
Jeff, you love this.
I do. The best time of year for movies, of course, the summer movie season. And then November and December, when all of the Oscar hopefuls start coming out. That's the best time of the year. I am a movie nerd.
My best times of the year do not revolve around movies at all.
Anyway, how's life there, Mr. Doan?
It is well. Things are well with me.
Just
cranking away. I'm up in Utah next week. Minneapolis, then Utah. Be out traveling and about.
As you often do.
It'll be exciting. Actually, it was fun. We were reminiscing today about when I was in Denver traveling through last year about this time, and we recorded the show. I sat in my car seeping Wi-Fi off of a public connection at a library 1 week, and I also had 1 week where I sat in a hotel parking lot with my computer recording the show. The things I won't go through to record this show for you.
We've had some exciting shows. We did an entire show once when my internet went down at my house, and so
you were tethered.
So I tethered to my phone, and we did the entire show via my tethering, which thankfully never died out. We have done many great things. I mean, I will give
not
you credit.
Not a few shows from like closets at friends' house that I'm visiting at 2 a.m.
That's true. I remember when you were in Ukraine.
Yeah. Dude, and you could hear my buddy snoring.
Yeah, it works out brilliantly for us. You are the man on the go. I am here with my stationary rig. It all works out in the end.
In other news, did you hear about Osama bin Laden?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did.
That's breaking news. I'm sure everybody is tuning in to us for this.
Yeah. In case you didn't hear, President Obama is going to announce that bin Laden is dead.
We're going to release the show 3 days ago.
It's
going to
be exciting. Actually, I think we might have. We were tentatively planning on recording on Sunday night. We were looking at it, but then all the news started breaking about Obama, and it just, you don't just start recording a podcast.
And I says, Jeff, you want to go? And Jeff says, hold on, I'm watching this CNN broadcast.
Yeah, because I'm not. You know, come on, that's important.
This is your love.
It's important stuff. The beauty was,
How do you feel? How do you feel about the current situation? Like I was driving home today, and they mentioned the tornadoes in Arkansas, and that we had some cleanup crews still down there from the tornadoes that happened last week. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I forgot that we had like devastating tornadoes throughout the South.
Last week. I mean, like, well, Tuscaloosa is what got rocked big time, man, in Alabama.
Yeah,
they got trashed. So that stinks. I thought that was going to have something to do with bin Laden.
Osama bin Laden, do you think that that was the wisest move?
To take him out completely?
Yeah, because my honest, I guess, assessment is that obviously the man had to go, right?
Sure.
But
we could have paraded him around.
The fear of retaliation, you know? Like the way that it was done and the door that it opens for retaliation, it's a pretty, pretty big door. Would you agree? Is that something that you have considered?
Yes, we should.
Jeff?
We should have brought him home
instead of burying
and
him.
And possibly alive.
That was weird.
Yeah, I think it's. There's been a lot of rancor about that. You know what? What's the deal?
It makes sense to do it, but still, I mean, that's.
I mean, I guess it doesn't. It doesn't, because it's like we're respecting Islamic tradition for a guy who, like, it's not like if he kills our soldiers, whether they are Christian or Jewish or Muslim, they're bothering to bury them. It is kind of weird, I think, but whatever. I do think they need to provide sound evidence, and I know the White House has been debating whether or not to release actual death photos of Obama, but I think they probably need to, especially after the burial at sea thing, because it's way too easy to get all the conspiracy theories going. You know, why would they announce this and then have no evidence to back it up and blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
I was bummed out. I thought they were gonna fly Obama's body all the way here and we could really, you know, have a ball.
You mean Osama, not
dang
Obama.
It I keep saying that.
And it's, I know, a throwback to Mitt Romney here.
Yeah, I know I'm not the only one. It's hard. Like, it's really just,
Fox News made that faux pas last night.
Dude, the beauty of that was they did it multiple times. I've seen different screen captures throughout the day of their ticker.
Oh, that's sad.
Saying that Obama bin Laden was dead. They were running it for a long time, apparently. Good job, Fox News.
So do you anticipate there being, like, the retaliation fear? Is that a sound fear?
It's too early to say. I think the hard thing here is that
you are the political scientist. This is kind of your wheelhouse.
Okay,
I
think easily there could be. It remains to be seen, obviously, whether Al-Qaeda will be actually weakened or not. I mean, the thing is, Bin Laden can die, but his doctrine, his aura, his belief system lives on. But at the same time, that could be such a destabilizing factor within Al-Qaeda to have its main leader and figurehead taken out that, you know, it could become a little bit more fragmented and not function as well. But we have no way of knowing that right now at all. So I wouldn't be surprised if there were retaliation. But make no mistake, I think this was a pretty solid message to would-be terrorists and what have you, that even if it takes us 10 years, the U.S. will get you eventually.
We will hunt down and punish the folks responsible for this wrong.
Yeah, eventually we will get there. I hope that Bush and Obama had a pleasant call together. And I hope that Obama actually thanked Bush for the good things he did do in Afghanistan. You don't hear me defending Bush much, so you should probably embrace this.
I hope so, too. You don't hear me defending Bush much.
No, he was terrible. But in Afghanistan, I've always thought, is a just place, a just war. So it remains to be seen. There could be a lot of fallout with Pakistan, because this looks terrible for Pakistan. Because he was bunkered down
100 meters or so from their...
Well, the thing is, he wasn't even in a border region. Like, we thought, you know, he might be living in some caves in Waziristan or somewhere along the Afghan border. He was living in, like, a bunker/mansion well into Pakistan, northeast of Islamabad, the capital. I mean, he was closer to India than he was to Afghanistan. And
His tactic was to not go shopping.
Yeah.
And just stay indoors.
Basically. So I was
really kind of surprised. All my friends, well, because I was in New York these last couple of months, all my friends were posting pictures last night. And actually, the response to finding out that he was dead really kind of bothered me. I'm not sure if it bothered you at all, but like the parading in the streets and the quasi-rioting going on. I mean, it was just ridiculous, kind of the response. It was not what I expected at all, or what I thought was right. There's a couple of articles written.
There was a great one last night, one came out
through the Atlantic. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Or was it the Atlantic? No, I think it was the Atlantic. There was one written by some woman whose husband died in 9/11. That was a really good one.
No. So the one I saw, or that I read last night, that really, I mean, the issue is that we have 10 years to kind of learn the lesson, you know, and when the World Trade Center happened for us, and we saw them parading and, you know, them, when we saw like, the supporters of that parading in the streets and like cheering, that was really, really offensive to us. And not that we're trying to be cautious of his supporters and stuff, but I mean, it's really odd to kill a guy and to give that exact same response that offended us so much. Back in the day. I mean, we should be excited that we've, you know, like that we've done the world a justice and a service by
absolutely
doing this.
Sure.
But I think, man, just the whole response is really, really kind of irked me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I guess it goes both ways. There was a quote from somebody, I think I put it on my Facebook wall, that said, you know, it's, what was the exact quote? But basically that it's unnerving and odd to be celebrating the death of someone, but yet this feels right. In a way, so
there's a Martin Luther King Jr. quote, which I'm pretty sure is legit. I'm not 100%. Like I did some searches on it, and I think it's real.
Whatever you are, never, be a good one.
You can never tell. It says, "I will mourn the loss of thousands." So I post this on my Facebook wall, right? And I say, it says, "I will mourn the loss of thousands of precious lives, but I will not rejoice in the death of one, not even an enemy, returning hate for hate multiple times, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." Martin Luther King Jr. supposedly said that, right? And so my buddy, this was actually my favorite response. My buddy says, "I like that quote, but I like this one too. I've never wished a man dead, but I have read some obituaries with great pleasure. Mark Twain." And it's not that I'm against people being excited about this or being, you know, like that this is a great feat and bravo to our, you know, the special forces that made it come about. Just tone it down a little bit and don't be so obnoxious about it so much. Like more kind of the Mark Twain side of things. You know, don't wish a man dead, but you can take great pleasure in reading the obituary.
I was very tempted to go by the White House last night.
I heard it was a
crazy shenanigans. This is the same thing. I thought it was dumb. All the news footage showed it was a very young crowd. It was clearly just like drunk kids from George Washington University, which is right around the, you know, just a couple blocks over from the White
Freaking
House.
Freaking George Washington.
That seems to be all it was. So it was weird because it just felt inappropriate. These kids are partying and like screaming, and it looked like they just won the World Series or something. And they're sitting there like all these dudes with like a beer in their hand, just going like, number one, yeah, and just screaming at the camera. So it felt very odd. It felt like a victorious sporting event, not the death of the most vilified man in the world, which was awkward. So I did not want to be a part of it. I don't know if you even saw this. There actually were actual cheerleaders, trained ones, at least I assume they were, up on people's legs or shoulders doing stuff. And they'd even jump down, that sort of, you know, the way cheerleaders like jump down from a pyramid, they sort of hop up and swoop down with their bodies and get caught.
Oh, yes.
There
I'm
were
envisioning
cheerleaders
it now.
Cheering on people's shoulders. It was weird. So
but
I
it's not, I don't
I
know.
I decided not to bother with it. So anyway,
just
it's an
odd reaction, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a new era. There was the one really great photo, I don't know if you saw this, that was actually released by the White House that showed all of the powers that be in the Situation Room last night, I think when they were getting the news for sure.
Uh-huh.
And that's actually a pretty good photo. Obama looks very intense. Hillary's jaw like is dropping. Robert Gates looks very smug, like, yes, that's right, sucker. It's kind of a cool photo. What was that?
I said I pictured Tom Brokaw in there.
Yeah, sure. In the Situation Room. No, sir.
Definitely.
You're thinking of Wolf Blitzer and his show, The Situation Room. Anyway, folks, so we recognize that not all of our listeners are Americans, so thank you for indulging us.
Pretty much the world's a mess right now, though.
In our little bit. Well, what a random week. It was almost like out of a fairy tale. The prince and the princess got married, and the villain died. It just everything came together.
It's like the Black Swan. What's that Disney movie? The black is that it? The White Swan, the Black Swan.
I don't know.
Swan Princess. That's it. Swan Princess. That is what I compare this week to. And that, my friends, will be the name of the show. The Swan Princess.
Yeah. So anyway, this week there's so much stuff is going on this week. So much stuff that we have decided just to go to town with a great number of stories.
I'll start. First,
knock yourself out. Go.
First, a branch president from Utah is deported for being there illegally. Jeff, that reaction is really not what I was expecting, but I still a Draper branch president who's serving apparently filed some he came to America in order to get amnesty or sanctuary, if you will. And he's just here cruising. And so then things expire and for some reason his stuff was rejected. And they come in and arrest him and his family, take them away. But he was serving like the kind of crux of the story is that he's currently serving or was currently serving as a branch president for the church there in Draper. So it's a little bit awkward. I don't know, kind of a crummy situation. His friends defend him as saying he is solid and law abiding in all senses. But this, I don't know. So this is actually an interesting conversation because there's a lot going on right now with the church and immigration.
Yes.
But like when, cause I've seen the situation or this kind of scenario play out before in other countries, but what is it like, how much do you support the law of the land type of thing? Because there's sometimes, I mean, obviously he was not in a good situation, in his home country. He was trying to get out. He's trying to come here for, like, freedom from the government type of thing. Do you support that? Like, do you support that even though it's against the laws of the local land? You know, how much understanding and appreciation do you offer?
Well,
it's a tough question.
It is, and it's been interesting because we've talked in the past about this whole, what is it, HB 116, the guest worker program
bill
that's been passed into law in Utah, of course. And the church has taken an interesting stance on this. So you say, how do you respond? So the church's official stance is based on three principles, they say, and this was just released today from the newsroom. It says, number one, the commandment to love thy neighbor. Two, the importance of keeping families intact. And then three, the federal government's obligation to secure its borders. So the church supports this Utah compact, as they describe it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I think it's funny, though, that they include in that the federal government's obligation to secure its borders. So it's interesting because, especially, I believe, because, like it says here, there's an editorial, that the measures allow those who are now here illegally to work legally, provide for their families, and become better contributing members of our community, but without establishing a path to citizenship or granting amnesty. So I think that's why the church is on board. Nowhere in this bill is it trying to provide people with citizenship or amnesty or anything like that. It just allows people to work here even though they are here illegally, basically.
That's an interesting... So why do you think it is that the church supports that specifically?
I think it's basically that, because the compact itself is just to allow people to work and provide for their families, which I think is a stronger message in the church of keeping families together and loving thy neighbor than it is to try to, you know, be very draconian in enforcing immigration stuff to, you know, teach people a lesson in immigration or what have you. I mean, I can't speak for everyone. I think it is interesting. There was a great article actually this week in the Trib, all about sort of the rift that we talked about this last week with the tithing thing. People are refusing to pay tithing because of what the church has said about this.
Right.
And it goes on that the more conservative factions of the church now are experiencing what the more liberal members of the church have felt oftentimes when they find themselves at odds with Salt Lake. Let's say Prop 8 being one of the most recent examples for the more liberal members. But now in this case, the liberal members are very happy because this is all about compassion and spirit of the law more than letter of the law per se, and these more conservative members feel kind of on the out with the church, and this is a rare position for them because by and large the more conservative wing of the church doesn't tend to disagree with what comes down from the top. They tend to be in line with most stuff. So
now it's a tough line because it's not a right or wrong, right? And the church it's interesting that they make a point to stand up for any of this, right? Like to come out in support of it at all. They haven't signed a name under anything, but they support the initiative, right? The initiative of compassion and dealing with things that way.
But it is funny that we don't like sign it, but we even had H. David Burton, the presiding bishop, attend the signing of the bill. And
they're clearly supportive of it.
And
right?
It's funny because even though he was appearing as himself, he said that he represented the church, like by being there. So yeah, it's an interesting sort of relationship and back and forth that's going on with it.
I'm curious, man. I'm really curious to see how this, like, what kind of develops of some of that sentiment, because you can understand some of the frustrations. I mean, the story of the bishop being deported or being detained
is
a great, like, that's a great illustration of exactly what the goals are of this bill and what the goals are of the church. And I'm curious to see what happens with this guy in particular, you know, old what was his name, Felix, how do you say that, Callejas, Callejas,
I'm just gonna let you keep.
I don't know, He's
Felix,
a nice El Salvadorian man.
Felix Callejas.
That's what I said. Callejas. That's perfect.
It's true. You did a wonderful job.
Thank you. Welcome. So do you just turn a blind eye to that? Like, is that what you're trying to do? I mean, one, I'm curious too, what the right position was for, say, members of the church that might have known about his position, right? Like, is your responsibility to be a whistleblower and turn him in, or do you keep your mouth shut and you know, mind your business? Like, what's the right rule for that? Like, where are you supposed to land? Do you
like do we have a duty as law-abiding citizens, which is what we believe, and based on the Articles of Faith, to turn in those who are not here legally, basically?
Yeah, I don't know, man. When every country has like their own, I couldn't imagine being a member of the church in Nazi days and being like, well, the laws of the land are pretty jacked up. I'm not gonna whistleblow on everybody that shouldn't, you know, that you're looking for. Like, that's, you know, like, there comes a point where, not that I'm comparing us to Nazi Germany at all, but like, I'm comparing the kind of the conflict of interest or how that conversation must go at some point of saying, okay, well, what is supported and what isn't? I don't know.
Yeah, it's, and then, yeah, that's a very, I don't have an answer for you when it comes to that. Though there have been times in the past. My mom often had some work done on her house, and a delightful South African family, an Afrikaans-speaking South African family, had immigrated to our ward a number of years ago. And he was a very crappy craftsman and unreliable and never did what he said he was doing. And I got so tired of trying to get this guy to follow through on what he committed to do that there were many times that I was tempted to lecture him and be like, look, because I know they were in the country illegally. They had no papers at all. That's why he did not have a contractor's license or anything like that. But that's why you also got a deal on his work. And I was tempted many times to threaten to call the authorities and be like, look, son, you're going to fix this or else you're going to be going back to Johannesburg. What now?
Well, I know of a guy, like of a guy that came over to America to study from Africa, ends up like didn't end up studying and has just been living for the last 5 or 6 years just around with, like, he's a single guy and so he just kind of bums around singles wards and everybody tries to give him like little side jobs, go weed the garden, mm-hmm. mow the lawn type of thing. The bishops of the different wards, I'll give him work. Like, he's a known illegal, but nobody, and he can't go on a mission. He would have to go home to his home country to leave mm-hmm. from there. Kind of a situation. It's really kind of messed up, but everybody supports him, right? It's like this kind of camaraderie of everybody pulling together to help this guy so he can stay here illegally.
Mm-hmm.
Which you want to do because you're his friend, right? Like, you know the guy, but at the same time, there's some, like, it's illegal, right? He's not supposed to be here. So what's the right response to that?
And it's funny because the church is usually aware of stuff like this. There was a kid I knew back in California whose family immigrated from Argentina when he was young, but he wasn't born in the States. And as far as I know, he is in the U.S. illegally. And he was really worried about going on his mission because he's like, well, if they send me abroad, I won't be able to come back to the U.S. because I won't have any papers. So I think they just sent him domestically, I'm sure, fully aware of the fact that he would not be able to, you know, that he's just has no residency.
That's odd to me. That's odd. Well, it's like the bishops.
I saw it on my mission a lot of the time, too, though. You had a lot of Latin American immigrants to Spain. Very few of them were there legally, and they'd get called to missions just elsewhere in Spain, so they wouldn't have to leave the country.
Huh.
Even though I think the church probably would have liked to send them, especially be able to send missionaries from Spain to Latin America and have this and that, but I never, ever saw it. They always just served in Spain, so who knows?
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's going to change. Now, yeah, we'll have to follow the developments of this. I know there's a lot of stuff going on that, like, Utah County is threatening not to uphold the law and blah 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 blah. We're basically going to get tea partiers within the church now. It's going to be exciting. I mean, actually, like, at church there are many tea partiers in the church, but you know what I mean. So on a completely unrelated note, save the perhaps political elements of it, a lovely artist named John McNaughton has pulled his works from the BYU bookstore. He has pulled them. He said BYU bookstore is not worthy.
Oh, sometimes I could just light myself on fire.
He basically thinks that BYU's bookstore has caved in to pressure from the few liberals at BYU. Because, namely, he has one painting entitled One Nation Under God, which shows Christ in a robe standing on some steps with the U.S. Capitol and the Supreme Court.
Does he have a menorah emblazoned on his chest?
I'm going to say it's the Tree of Life.
Oh, okay. Could go either way.
Or maybe a jacaranda tree. Or an oak tree. Maybe a cherry tree.
Some sort of a shrub. Mahogany. Okay, anyway, keep going.
Any kind of tree, really. So anyway, Christ is standing there holding the U.S. Constitution. And there's some little boy up there, like, touching it. Oh, look, the law. Anyway, so behind Christ are many of the founding fathers, and then some, like, Marine people. Inexplicably, Ronald Reagan is there in the mix. Also, there appears to be a red coat, it looks like, from Britain. I don't really know what that's all about, but there's someone like that there. And they're all hanging out. Now, that alone is a little bit over the top. Like, admittedly, I don't get Reagan being there other than the fact that he's become this grandfather to the conservative movement nowadays. So it's almost like, throw him in there just to show how Republican
Jeff,
we are.
You know the term, I'm Reaganing, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's Reagan is he's symbolic of all things good, of all things wondrous.
Yes.
Complete.
Okay, so that's one thing, and that'd be one thing on its own. But the main thing is the lower right-hand corner of the picture. And this is how he describes it himself. In this corner, McNaughton depicts those he sees as having, quote, pushed our country towards socialism. And these people are a Supreme Court justice, a politician, a Hollywood producer, a professor, and a, quote, liberal news reporter. And so these people are basically sitting in shame.
Wait, what's the guy in the very bottom right that's holding some sort of a, what is that, a matchbox?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know which one that is. How many did we count here? Let's see. We counted the...
I've got the Supreme Court justice, the politician, the...
This is like Where's Waldo? I only count five, and there are seven people there. So I don't know. Maybe he's a money changer?
I think Mark Wahlberg is among them.
I don't know who's who for sure in that.
I would just like to spread that rumor. Mark Wahlberg supports communism.
The Supreme Court justice, though, is very distraught. I mean, look at him. He's on his knees saying, what have I done? What have I done?
Well, and Abraham Lincoln's on his knees being like, hey, buddy, what was that all about?
So I just think this picture's hilarious because, you know what? I stand behind BYU yanking this because this is not along the lines of, hey, we believe... Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were divinely inspired, and that's an important thing to recognize. This just falls along the lines of just Fox News baiting, totally partisan, paint a great picture of conservatism and a negative picture of liberalism stuff. So I think that's totally fair because BYU officially has a nonpartisan, politically neutral stance, and it would not be appropriate to sell that at BYU.
Anyway, good times.
Sorry.
Old McNaughton.
Wow, this is such a long story, too. So, yeah, so McNaughton refuses to put... He's taken everything from BYU. Everything. We are all punished now.
Why would you do this?
How can he deny us? Jerk.
So I have a story that hits me close to home.
Really?
It really, really does. I got to find it so I can pull it up.
You monster. You need to prepare. Do you want?
Where's the light pole one?
Oh, I was gonna do the light pole one, but you can have it if you want it. It's okay.
No, okay. So Elder Holland went and visited the Middle East this last week, saying that the congregations there had grown triple. They'd tripled in size.
They have.
He was very, very happy. He met with the members in the Manama Bahrain stake.
Manama Bahrain.
And Namamna Bahrain district.
Manamana.
And the Abu Dhabi state. I didn't even know we had Manamana wards there.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. There's been a Persian Gulf stake for something like 25 years. I think it says Elder.
Hasn't it mostly been American servicemen, though?
Yeah, I believe. Well, not servicemen. That's a factor. It depends on where you are. I think a lot of it are just foreign workers who live there. That's the bulk of it. I don't know what the actual numbers are, but I do not think a substantial portion are actually natives who are going. It's mostly foreign people. But yeah, there's been a stake in the Persian Gulf for a very, very long time.
As there should
And it
be.
Mostly just consists of the more liberal societies there, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, and Bahrain. It's basically just those three, I think. I don't know for sure. So this is a big deal because they've split the stake, not into two stakes, but now they have one stake and a district separately. So,
which is exciting. Well done.
I think it's awesome. And it's cool because, an apostle hadn't visited there in a very, very long time.
Wasn't it? It was Elder Hyde that dedicated that land, right?
Was it?
Orson Hyde?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I actually have a friend who might be going to work in Doha, the capital of Qatar. And this individual would be a member of that stake. So if we get some on-the-ground reporting, I'll let you know. how it is.
Finally. Feet on the ground.
I am going to tell you now about why Phoenix hates everyone.
Yes, do tell.
Because apparently they do. We know of the woes the Phoenix Temple has had up there in North Phoenix, changing, you know, lowering it, basically switching the levels out, making you enter on the second level and burying the first level. All sorts of issues because the neighbors don't like it. Now, there's also a meeting house that's been constructed in the area, and the neighbors just are not happy because the light poles around it, the ones that, you know, illuminate the street and what have you, and the parking lot, the poles themselves are white. And this is not appropriate for Arizona, apparently.
Shut your face!
Yes, they demand that they should be either removed, which I'm sure, you know, would, everyone just wants to take lights away. That's great for safety. Or paint them brown or bronze. No white light poles, an anthem for anybody. The white has got to go. Arizona hates purity. This is what I've learned. I have nothing more to say about the matter, but that is just redonkulous. The other funny thing is the steeple, of course, being built. I think this building might even be taller than
the Phoenix
Temple.
Wait, how do they object to white poles?
Because it doesn't go with the area. Have you been to Arizona? It's devoid of life. You can't have a
life-affirming
hue.
So what, do they need everything to be brown and ugly?
Have you been to the Phoenix area before?
Yes, it's brown and ugly.
This is something that's been beyond me, and I've never understood it. The terrain is brown and ugly. And so for some reason they feel that they need to paint all of their buildings brown and ugly to match, rather than have pleasant looking structures that would stand
like white
out for, like
poles.
White that would stand out from the cityscape or from the landscape rather.
For as some reason, far as light poles go, they look terrible. I certainly hope LDS Church takes it upon themselves to either remove them or paint them brown.
Yes.
No white light poles in anthem for anybody. The white has to go.
I already said all of that. But
spoken like a...
I mean, the chapel is brick colored. If anyone, for our Arizona listeners, please explain to me the Arizona obsession with having butt ugly brown terrain and making your buildings match rather than making it look nicer.
But why? Who cares? Like, who cares?
The white has got to go. Ron Jarek said so.
I need a sound clip of him, Mr. Jarek.
Anyway, so...
I want the white out of here.
So more bigotry from Northern Phoenix for all of you. Congratulations.
The only thing that can combat this is a story about the All Blacks in General Conference.
Yes. Or the rugby kid over there in Australia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's worth a mention.
Yeah, just
mention
him real quick. He deserves it. Let's help him out. We should, you know, email him and push him along.
We'll hope that he becomes a missionary. Old manly young gun William Hoppe.
I love the way they write in Australia. He's a manly young gun.
Wiry fella. He's supposed to be like the big and upcoming star in the rugby world.
Yes, sir.
Which often, I guess, Kiwi folk are.
This is Australia.
He's telling, Australia. Like, so they got a bunch of people recruiting him. He's coming out and saying, you know what? Maybe I will serve a mission. Maybe I will. I wonder, like, we talked about this with Jimmer, right? Like, I really, man, you will never, I don't know. You'd never meet a guy that's like, man, I sure wish I could have those 2 years back and I didn't have to waste my time on that mission. Blah, blah, blah. That story never happens. But, I don't know, like Steve Young even, right? Steve Young he came out and said that he wished that he'd gone. He had a fairly successful career. He did a lot of cool things.
He had a
but
very
like,
successful
he just,
career.
Nothing can replace a good
That's
mission.
True. And it's a difficult place to be in. I mean, I don't know how famous he is in Australia, but clearly we've never even heard of him. So if he were to serve a mission somewhere else, I think he'd be just fine. And everyone would think he was just the charming Australian missionary.
Like Sean Bradley going to Australia and then coming home to America and humiliating himself, his teams, and the church.
No, he was a great one. Shaq loved him.
Did he?
Yes.
On his rap album, Shazam?
No, I was about to quote Shazam, which was actually one of the better movies ever made. Or Steel, another great movie by Shaq.
He's got a rap album, in case you didn't know.
Oh, I know. I keep the entire Shaq anthology on my person at all times.
You got to go to school and get the good letters.
Are you Jamaican now? What are you talking about?
It's one of his rap songs.
You've got to go to school, man. Yeah. All right.
And get the good letters.
All right. So it would not be a complete week without giving myself an opportunity to make fun of the Mormon Times. They just make it so easy.
Oh. What have they done? What have they done?
You love this. So there was a story on there. It leads the entertainment section, and it's called "How to Create a General Conference Playlist."
Oh, so like, is this some sort of a feature?
Yes. Also, as a side note, I think they should be capitalizing "General Conference," and they don't in the article, which I'm pretty sure is wrong. It's "General Conference." It's a pronoun. Anyway. So I read this, I think, oh, and it shows a diagram of General Conference on the church website and a little oval thing to click, 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 click. I figure the church website has some great functionality where I can just pick and choose and make a playlist of General Conference, whether it's music or talks, whatever I want, right? Let me tell you what they say we need to do. To create a General Conference music playlist, go to a specific conference page that includes the talks and the words, and show the music. Once the music is displayed, click on the song you want to download, and then download it. Okay? And then save the target as an MP3. You follow? So what you're really doing is just saving audio directly from the church's website. And then, either in Windows Media Player or iTunes, because no other media players exist. Okay?
Oh, Mormon
times. No Zoom, no Winamp. And then it basically says, for example, on iTunes, I love what it says in iTunes, too. Open up iTunes, file, click add file to library, then locate the MP3, click open, and then create a playlist by clicking new playlist, and then add the music to it. So that is how you can make a General Conference playlist, by basically managing MP3s that you download from the church's website.
Jeff hates the Mormon Times, that's all we're trying to say.
Why do they write these articles? I get it that not everyone's tech savvy, but... this was no great...
It's called link baiting, Jeff.
You know what?
Keyword baiting.
No, and they're great at that. You know what you want to do if you want to create a General Conference playlist? I have a much easier way for you to do it within iTunes. Go to the podcast, find the General Conference podcast, subscribe to it, download it, and hit shuffle. You're done.
Booyah.
Achieve.
All right. Also, in the as a quick little mention, there's a suggestion that the MTC training... curriculum has changed a little bit.
Or it's going to. Yeah, it's going to.
And we're not 100% sure what it's changed to. The suggestion is that they will no longer be focusing on Chapter 3 of Preach My Gospel in the MTC, and so you have to, like, the expectation is that you'll study that before you come in.
Or it's, like, on your own. Yeah, like, they're just not going to bother with it in the MTC.
And then you just show up and work. Now, wait, Jeff, did you ever figure out what chapter 3
was? Yeah, I did. At first I was wrong because I was looking at lesson 3, which is called The Gospel of Jesus Christ. And I was like, so they're not supposed to study this. That's terrific.
That would be a mistake.
It's good to know. Okay, chapter 3 is entitled Study and Teach. So I believe all of chapter 3 deals with what and how you study.
I'm curious, were they losing a lot of time to how to study and how to teach? I feel like that would be, those are good principles to practice.
I mean, last I checked, one goes to the MTC to learn how to study and teach, especially if you're going native language speaking. I mean, that's what you do.
So I wonder what it is now. Is it more just like a hopped up EFY without the dances?
Well, maybe it just focuses on the other sections of the actual doctrine and the things you do teach rather than spending time on the minutiae of... like teaching methodology and just stuff like that. It was very confusing to me when I read this release. And this is written by, I think, the mission president in some mission in the Philippines, but I believe this is church-wide. It didn't make much sense.
Yeah. Well, so if you're in the MTC, talk to us in 12 weeks. Call into the show from the field while you're
looking at, or while you're busy on Facebook doing quote-unquote missionary work.
Suckers.
Because we know they do that now. So...
anyway, yeah, so we'd love to know more. If you have any insight, feel free to write in. And also, Jeff, can you take us to our moment of Zen?
I think there's one more thing that you want to mention, sir. Don't you want to talk about how mad you are about Michael Young, the president of the University of Utah?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Please do.
I was this gets me so fired up. This gets me really, really angry.
And you have to do it in 40 seconds or less. Go.
All right, 40 seconds or less. So President Michael Young, the former University of Utah president, has taken a job with the University of Washington. He will be the president up there. And so he takes the job and he does a little, you know, he's doing a little kind of PR interview thing, talking about, you know, they're asking him questions about how it's going to be and that kind of stuff. And so people start writing into the Seattle Times, and the Seattle Times is publishing them. It's all like blatant anti-Mormon stupidness. Things like, any leader who professes a strong belief in religion and religious hocus pocus is not fit to be leaders. Things like, this is the one that really gets me going. All Mormons support bigotry. Michael Young is a Mormon, so Michael Young supports bigotry. It's like, flawless logic, you moron.
That's just the transitive property, and you're a big fan of that, Al. So.
I love the transitive property. In fact, I've written papers on the transitive property. But, like, man, it's just, so long as America continues to, like, you know, that this even happens, right? That this is even an issue. It's absolute ignorance, absolute bigotry. For a guy, this is a guy that's accomplished. He's done great things for the University of Utah. Yeah. It's a privilege that they have him come into their school, and all they can do is try and mock his religion. And the thing that really, really irritates me is you remove Mormons from this altogether, and you put any other religion in its place, and it's completely out of line. Completely out of line. The Seattle Times should be ashamed of themselves for even, you know, publishing stuff like this. I mean, it's just absolute slander against a religion. That's not okay.
You know what, buddy? I say that you and I should co-author a letter to them, and I'm serious.
Let's do it.
Let's write a letter, like a editorial style thing, and we will submit it to them.
Cool. I'm down.
Okay. I like it. And I agree with you. It's stupid, because for that exact reason. It's one thing to criticize people, but it's the fact that every other religion is out of bounds. Well, us are like, well, Jehovah's Witnesses. But,
well, I'm all for free speech and stuff, sure, right? But yeah. you don't hate speech against another religion is not okay.
It's not okay. And the sad thing is, in our society, somehow it's okay. Even in a forum, like, I mean, the newspaper itself is not saying these things. These are all readers' comments. But still, it's like, it's ridiculous.
Hey, you choose what you publish.
As a quick aside before I take us out, because it's the beginning of the month. One thing, the Atlanta Temple, Atlanta, Georgia, was rededicated over the weekend after its substantial renovation. So, congratulations, Atlanta.
Woo! You
can stop driving to Charleston or wherever they have them going to go to the temple.
Finally.
So, that's been rededicated. Also, the church's second solar-powered meeting house is happening in Mesa, Arizona. Remember, the first one was up in Farmington, I think, last year that we reported on it?
It's known for its sun up in Farmington.
And yeah, and this one is at least in Arizona, which makes a little bit more sense. And look, the building is brown. Surprise of the century. So now we're going to move on, finishing up with the Zarahemla Times.
Take us there, Jeff.
Here's
this is your jam.
Beckstrom is going to take us home. It shows the family together, minus the daughter. So you've got dad.
I love that we do this.
The mom. I should know their names by now, I feel, but I don't. The mom says...
Kib, Lib, and Saraya.
Sure. Right. The mom says, what's going on? And then Dad Nephi says, Kib, who I believe is the son, Kib thinks it might have been the prophet who rescued us from the Gadiantans. Then the mom says, it makes sense. Then the mom says again, isn't it the prophet's job to save people? And Kib says, told ya.
Zing!
That one doesn't even make sense to me. Maybe I missed out some sort of... Maybe there's
Give me a rickshaw.
I believe Beckstrom is turning this into a serial work. So clearly I need to know the context of previous strips for everything to make
you
sense.
You think that's true, but it's not. He is not turning it into a serial work. Unless it's a serial work that goes back 2 years, because I've tried to understand the man. There's no logic.
There's no logic to it. But once again, folks, we encourage you to go to the Zarahemla Times and comment on him. Please, 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 do it.
Have a great week, everybody. You can find us at thisweekinmormons.com, facebook.com/thisweekinmormons, contact at thisweekinmormons.com, and twitter.com/therealtwim.
And speaking of contact, I actually talked to some people this week who almost expressed apprehension in suggesting ideas and stuff and this and that. We welcome that. So bear that in mind. We love to hear from you. And if you have thoughts about the show or things you would want to hear about or that we could do differently, you know, we're not necessarily saying that we're going to do whatever you tell us, but let us know. Tell us what you think. We would love that. And once again, that's contact@thisweekinmormons.com or just write on the site or on our Facebook wall. Any of those are fine.
That's right. All right. We'll see you, everybody. Have
Alan
a great week.
R. Doan, have a terrific week.
Jeffrey Eleanor Openshaw.
That's right. Love me that Roosevelt. She's a keeper. I'm going to go now. See you, buddy. And this has been, once again, thank you for listening. This Week in Mormons, or TWIM. Have a terrific, magical, Osama bin Laden free week. Victory!
I just can't help but notice that you remember during the Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter debates that Ronald Reagan came up with this great thing about the misery index and that he hung that around Jimmy Carter's neck and that had a lot to do with Jimmy Carter losing. Well, we're going to have to hang the Obama misery index around his neck. And I'll tell you, the fact that you've got people in this country really squeezed, with gasoline getting so expensive, with commodities getting so expensive, families are having a hard time making ends meet. So we're going to have to talk about that and housing foreclosures and bankruptcies and higher taxation. We're going to hang in with that, so to speak, metaphorically, with you have to be careful.